Why do I love church worship as opposed to worshipping on myself? Because this morning I heard Bob pick up the violin and lift it to a new level. Thank you, Bob. I heard Jim clap because he just had a clap. I heard somebody just making a tapping noise because they just had to tap. That's why our corporate worship is so beautiful, because when we're free to worship together, we can lead each other into greater worship. What a wonderful thing it is. Our reading this morning is from John chapter 14, verse 9. And I didn't check with Doug, so I hope he doesn't mind. I'm reading from the message. Chapter 14 of John, verse 9. You've been with me all this time, Philip, and still don't you understand? To see me is to see the Father. So Cynthia and I go out and contemplate on the mothers. I leave you to contemplate and learn about God our Father.
Thank you, Judy. Things only a mum can teach. My mother taught me about anticipation. Just wait until your father gets home. My mother taught me about receiving. You're going to get it when we get home. My mother taught me to meet a challenge. What were you thinking? Answer me when I talk to you. Don't talk back to me. My mother taught me logic. Because I said so, that's why. And if you fall out of that swing and break your neck, you're not going to go to the shops with me. My mother taught me medical science. If you don't stop crossing your eyes, you're going to stay that way. My mother taught me to think ahead. If you don't pass your spelling test, you'll never get a good job. My mother taught me ESP. Put your sweater on. Don't you think I know when you're cold? My mother taught me humor. When that lawnmower cuts off your toes, don't come running to me. My mother taught me how to become an adult. If you don't eat your vegetables, you'll never grow up. My mother taught me about sex. How do you think you got here? My mother taught me about genetics. You're just like your father. My mother taught me about my roots. Don't you think you were born, or do you think you were born in a barn? My mother taught me about the wisdom of age. When you get to be my age, you will understand. My mother taught me about justice. One day you'll have kids, and I hope they turn out just like you. Then you'll see what it's like. My mother taught me about religion. You better pray that will come out of the carpet. My mother taught me about time travel. If you don't straighten up, I'm going to knock you into the middle of next week. That's probably a father problem. My mother taught me foresight. Make sure you wear clean underwear in case you're in an accident. My mother taught me irony. Keep crying and I'll give you something to cry about. My mother taught me about contortionism. Will you look at the dirt on the back of your neck? My mother taught me about stamina. You sit there until all that spinach is finished. My mother taught me about the weather. If it looks as if a tornado swept through your room, it probably did. My mother taught me about how to solve physics problems. If I yelled because I saw a meteor coming toward you, would you listen then? And my mother taught me about hypocrisy. If I've told you once, I've told you a million times. Don't exaggerate. I think I'll leave it there. There's too many going on. trying to think about this little series of messages. Is this helpful? Is this practical? I sometimes wonder. But I do know this, that when your perception of your father, and every psychologist and every psychiatrist and everybody working in the mental health field will tell us that our perception of our father is how we actually live out life. It affects us so profoundly. We don't think about it so often, but it's there. And you can just about trace any issue back to how you got on with dad. And in many cases, how you got on with mum, but primarily how you got on with dad. That's why I think in God's economy, dads are pretty important in this whole picture. Well, I wanted to just share a little bit about the Father, our longing Father. But I want to start by reading to you a little story, really, from a neurologist named Oliver Sacks. And if you will bear with me while I read it, but it helped me understand some things. The mind's eye. A woman named Sue Barry learned to see in a whole new way later in life. As a child, she developed strabismus. I don't know, medical term, but it meant she had crossed eyes. And through surgery, it was corrected, and she was able to, her eyes were straight. But she had no idea there was anything wrong here with her 6-6 vision, or 20/20 vision, depends on whether you're imperial or metric, until she was at uni when an eye exam revealed that she lacked binocular vision. Her brain had never learned to merge the images from both eyes into one three-dimensional scene. She was looking just like that. It would ignore each eye in turn and rapidly shift between the two perspectives. And as a result, the world appeared flattened like a painting, just looking at her world like that. To Sue, this seemed like a minor inconvenience. She had learned to compensate. However, she could not ooh and ah like others, peering at various sites that are three-dimensional. Objects became round buildings would stand out against the sky. It wasn't until her late 40s that she began to have therapy to correct her vision. And for months she did exercises to train her eyes to focus together, but notices very little change. Then one afternoon, as she was climbing into her car, a startling sight greeted her. The steering wheel popped out from the dashboard. And over the next few days, her world dramatically changed. Grass spiked up out of the ground. Flowers seemed inflated, not flat as they used to be. And at lunch she would stare at a grape. Had no idea what I'd been missing. Ordinary things became extraordinary. Light fixtures floated and water faucets stuck out into space. And one winter's evening, she discovered snowflakes in a whole new way. I could see the space between each snowflake, and all the flakes together produced a three-dimensional dance. In the past, the snow would have appeared to fall in a flat sheet in one plain sight in front of me. I would have felt I was looking in on a snowfall, but now I felt myself within the snowfall, among the snowflakes. As I watched, I was overcome with a deep sense of joy. A snowflake can be quite beautiful, especially when you see it for the first time. Binocular vision. Couldn't see two things. They were separate rather than becoming one. And I have this conviction that so often we're like that when we read the Bible, that we see the God of the Old Testament as this harsh, demanding judge who's ready to wipe everybody out. And then we come to the New Testament, we see God and Jesus as compassionate and gentle and taking children on his lap. And we can't put those things together. And because we so often struggle with that, we think of God as being ready to hurt us at any moment. We do something wrong, and wham, God is going to take care of it. And so our picture so often as Christ followers is of a God that's kind of like, it's like binocular vision. We can't put it together. And yet in our text, my Father who has given them to me as his gift is the mightiest of all, and no one has the power to snatch them from my hand. The Father and I are one. It says in John 10:29, different text, I'm sorry. The Father and I are one. So when you see Jesus, you see the Father. And so how do these two fit together? Sometimes it's a challenge. It all harks back to a man, a Turkish churchman named Marcia. He believed that God was so gross in the Old Testament, he wanted to wipe it all out. Even when it came to references of God in the New Testament, he tried to get rid of it. And for centuries, people in the Christian community saw God as this harsh taskmaster that could never please him, never do anything right. And we're shriveled and we're worms. And I suspect that if you think about it for a moment, you may have felt a little bit that way at times. We have an extreme case of double vision sometimes. But what does the scripture say? I'll go back to that text. In the Passion Translation, it says, anyone who has looked at me has seen the Father. Jesus didn't have any problem with that. He didn't have any problem. So the more that we look at who Jesus is, and through the lens and the ears of Hebrew people in the scriptures, we see that the God of Israel looks more and more like Jesus, and Jesus looks more and more like the God of Israel. Because when we come to terms with who our Father is, we can start to really worship. He's a good, good Father. He's a good God. And some of the language of the Old Testament doesn't seem to make sense, but when you realize the genre in which it's written, you see that this is man's perspective so often of who God is, and yet God has revealed himself in the Old Testament of what he's really like. The God of Mr. Spock. Remember Mr. Spock? Any Star Wars fans here? Admit it. No? No? You don't get out much. Star Wars, I mean, it's brilliant stuff. But Mr. Spock, if you ever came across him, was devoid of emotion. Yes?
Mr. Spock was Star Trek.
Star Trek. What did I say it was?
Star Wars.
Thank you for the correction, Mickey. I appreciate that. You're right. I'm so sorry. All anger and sorrow. All those emotions were barred from Mr. Spock's thinking. It was just the facts. And so often in Christian community, it's a bit like that. We kind of perceive God as not having that kind of emotion, so we don't either. And it's almost like we're afraid to express emotion. I'm so glad to say that's all changing. That's all changed. You just want to read the Psalms and see how much emotion is there. You want to read the scriptures and read the words of Jesus and put emotion into it, and you'll see how emotional Jesus was. And then you read the scriptures in the Old Testament and you will see a passionate, longing, emotional God. He's created us with emotions. And we're like the Creator. Absolutely. Let's not be afraid of that. So I want us just for a moment to look at what God is like from the parables. And a parable you know well. And I want to read it to you just to remind us, just to refresh us. This is from Luke 15, and it's the parable of the prodigal son. I'd prefer to call it the parable of the prodigal God. Extravagant God. This is what Jesus said. Once there was a father with two sons. The younger son came to his father and said, Father, don't you think it's time to give me the share of your estate that belongs to me? So the father went ahead and distributed among the two sons their inheritance. That's an important little distinction that we should note in this parable. Shortly afterwards, the younger son packed up all his belongings, traveled off to see the world. He journeyed to a far-off land where he soon wasted all he was given in a binge of extravagant and reckless living. With everything spent and nothing left, he grew hungry, and there was a severe famine in that land, so he begged a farmer in that country to hire him. The farmer hired him and sent him out to feed the pigs. Now, for a Jewish boy to feed pigs, wow. Wow. The son was famished. He was willing to eat even the slop given to the pigs because no one would feed him a thing. Humiliated, the son finally realized what he was doing, and he thought, there are many workers at my father's house who have all the food they want with plenty to spare. They lack nothing. Why am I here dying of hunger, feeding these pigs and eating their slop? I want to go back home to my father's house. And I'll say to him, Father, I was wrong. I've sinned against you. I'll never be worthy to be called your son. Please, Father, just treat me like one of your employees. So the young son sent off for home. From a long distance away, the father saw him coming. Dressed as a beggar, great compassion swelled up in his heart for his son who was returning home. So the father raced out to meet him. He swept him up in his arms, hugged him dearly, kissed him over and over again with tender love. And then the son said, Father, I was wrong. I sinned against you. I could never deserve to be called your son. Just let me be. And the father interrupted him and said, Son, you're home now. And turning to the servants, the father said, Quick, bring me the best robe, my very own robe, and I'll place it on his shoulders. Bring me the ring, the seal of sonship, and I'll put it on his finger. And bring out the best shoes you can find for my son. And let's prepare a great feast and celebrate. For this beloved son of mine was once dead, but now he's alive again. Once he was lost, but now he's found. And everyone celebrated with overflowing joy. For a long, long time, I think I only ever saw that there was one son, and then I graduated and saw there were two sons, and then I graduated at university and saw it was all really about the father. It was about the father, and sometimes we don't actually see that, but it really is about the father. So who is the father in the parable? It's obviously God. He's the father. And Jesus is, remember, Jesus' Bible was the Old Testament. And he was expressing what the Father was like through this parable. Well, there's a little bit to it. Ken Bailey, he had traveled and studied traditional cultures of the Middle East. And throughout his travels, he asked his Arab subjects one question hundreds of times. Have you ever known a son to come to his father and demand an inheritance? The answer is always the same. It would be unthinkable. It would be an unspeakable outrage, a gross insult to one's father and family. Well, to us, the son's sin sounds like youthful foolishness. Didn't know what he was doing. Goes away and spends it all, sees the world. A man called Henry Nguyen, I love some of his writings and sayings. He says, the son's leaving is a heartless rejection of the home in which the son was born and nurtured, and a break with the most precious tradition, carefully upheld by the larger community of which he was a part. More than disrespect, it's a betrayal of the treasured values of family and community. The distant country is the world in which everything considered holy at home is disregarded. So in the Middle Eastern setting, this son's offense was absolutely huge, and it's very, very difficult for us to get hold of it. But it was a huge offense against the father and the home. We might see the parable a bit like this. And I read this and I thought, yeah, sometimes I see it like sin is a breaking of rules, kind of like getting a speeding ticket in a heavenly court system. Caught out, gotcha, yeah, the radar trap. And if we put our faith in Christ as atoning sacrifice, we'll pay the fine. And when you think about it, in this scenario, God is kind of pretty callous. and pretty harsh. Concerned that the law is upheld and the penalty is paid in full. The picture of sin in this parable is really that of a broken relationship. It's a personal offense and affront against a loving father, and the relationship is so broken, so broken, so broken. And the father's heart is broken because of this offense. Broken. And so it's really about our loving father in Luke 15. Wow, it's straight out of the Old Testament. Listen to a couple of scriptures as I read them to you. This is from Hosea chapter 11, verses 3 to 5. Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up by the hands, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of kindness, with the bonds of love. And I became to them as one who eases the yoke of their loins and jaws. And I bent down to them and fed them. A couple of generations later, in Jeremiah, we read this. I thought to myself how much I wanted to welcome you home as children and bless you with a good land and future, and a future to be envied by all the world. And I hoped for the day when you would call me my father and no longer pull away from me in my ways. But just as an unfaithful wife betrays her husband, so have you betrayed me, O house of Israel. That's the heart of God. That is the heart, the broken heart of God about his people. You know, so often, and I'm guilty, you know, we sit in a church meeting and we sort of scratch our heads, metaphorically speaking, we kind of scratch our head and say, What's this all about? We sing some songs. We listen to some guy at the front bump his jaws together a bit. And then we go home. And we get on with life as usual. You know. And we don't realize the unbelievable broken heart of God toward us. We don't. It doesn't dawn on us. And yet we're wayward kids, I'll tell you. A broken relationship. And it's really all about the Father's heart toward us. Philip Yancey says these words, follow around with some first-time parents. I'm sure you've all done that. Their conversation seems limited to one thing. Guess what? Their child. They dote on their wrinkled little bundle of joy. It's the most precious thing, and everything stops. Time stops, people stop, dogs stop, everything stops, and they're gazing into the little, you know, for this small human person. All wrinkled and purple, ugly looking, but beautiful. The only subject that they're talking about is their child. I spend hundreds on equipment and toys. You know, and the right kind of stroller that used to be that wide, and now it's that wide, and you need an SUV to fit it in, or maybe a trailer. Yeah. Why? Because the child is so precious. So precious. Super, super precious. And that mum just spent 9 months waiting, being formed in the womb, comes into the world, and dads get a little bit misty-eyed. True? And we get a bit emotional. Would you agree with that? Absolutely true. And when that child of ours breaks relationship with us, devastates us. Totally devastates us. And that's the heart of God. So, have you ever wondered what went through the mind of the prodigal father, extravagant father? As every evening, the parable gives this picture. Every evening he would go out there and he would look on the horizon and said, is he coming back yet? When's he going to come home? When is he going to come home? So here we see in this parable the father that Jesus knew, This is the God of the Old Testament. This is the God of Israel. This is the one whose heart was broken. God is described as Elkanah, the jealous God. He's an Arab father who is crushed by his son's apparent lack of love. God is a mother bear who roars a warning if you get too close to her cubs. God is a jilted boyfriend who's beside himself when he spots his true love on another guy's arm. Israel's God is not less emotional than we are. He's even more emotional than we are. Listen to what the prophet Jeremiah said, and I close with this. O Ephraim, my dear son, my dear son, my child in whom I take pleasure, every time I mention his name, my heart bursts with longing for him. Everything in me cries out for him. Softly and tenderly, I wait for him. This is God's decree. The father in the parable waits every day for relationship. How does he greet this kid when he first comes home? Does he thrash him? Does he chew him out for spending all his money? What does he do? He sets up a party. He puts the best clothes on him, the best ring. He honors him as his son with a ring. Calls him absolutely special. We won't talk about the other son. He had an inheritance and he was the religious guy. But I just want to say that this prodigal son came home. He came home to a loving, loving father. When we get to understand again and afresh what this father is like and what relationship is like, it will change us. You know, there's quite a number in our fellowship who are expecting revival. Do you know what revival is? Revival is coming home. It's coming home to a loving father. It changes you. Changes your world. Everything that you do. When we see two sides with binocular vision, he's a compassionate God, he's an angry God. And in some way we come together and we see the 3D effect of who God is. We find the heart of God, his father heart toward us. You know, I remember hearing at one stage that all of us were orphans. Until we come back and understand the Father, the heart of the Father to us. And you know, I mean, we're a small group here, but I suspect that I'm talking to some orphans still. We need to gain a spiritual depth perception and to grasp how wide, how deep, how long, how high is the Father's love for us. And we're going to sing that. We're going to sing that as our closing hymn. How deep the Father's love for us. As a group are getting prepared for that, can I ask you a serious question? A really serious question. Have you ever really experienced brokenness? Some of you have experienced brokenness over a child, I know. Child that's broken relationship or a spouse that's broken relationship. I know that your heart has been torn out of your chest over that. I know that. I personally have felt that in my family dynamic. But when we come to terms with our Father and his heart is broken toward us broken ones, the cross makes sense. His death, burial and resurrection starts to make sense. This Christian life starts to make sense. Church with its rules and regulations, yeah, they're important and they're rails to run on, but the real heart of it is those that have come home to the Father's heart. How deep the Father's love for us. Let's stand. Sing that together, shall we? as we go out into this week today, it's my prayer, and I guess it's our benediction as we go, that we might have true 6-6 vision, that we'll see who God really is, and we'll understand something of the broken heart of God, but the rejoicing heart of God when we come home to Him, and there's a celebration, there's a party. And may that be so for His name's sake. Amen. Amen. Happy Mother's Day. Wonderful. Did we have a blessing there?
We did. We had two wonderful blessings for the children.
Do you want to read them? That'd be cool. Oh, yeah. Look at that. I'll hold one side.
If you do want to read that one, that was one of the blessings for you.
May your life be filled with love. Love all around. May your days be filled with laughter and joy. Joy surrounding. May your days be filled with ambience. God's ambience.
Excellent.
What a wonderful blessing. And I think there's another one there.
Another one?
Can we find it?
No.
Yeah. There's a kind of a mic falling down here somewhere. Can't use that
one. I'll leave that one.
I'll read it in a big loud voice. You may your life be filled with love, love all around. May your days be filled with laughter, a joy, joy surrounding. May your days be filled with abundance, God's abundance. That's pretty cool. And another one for Mum. Where
there's,
is this?
There's another blessing there for the children too.
Where's that one?
Can we find it? Yes, that one.
That one. Pray for good health, fun, family times, enjoyment of new things in life and strength for challenges ahead. Wow. Mums, be blessed today. Thank you for all of that. Thank you. Thank you, children. Wonderful.
I think I've spotted the morning tea, and I think there's another blessing coming. It looks pretty amazing out there.
I carried some of it in. I'd like to carry some of it out.